Here's the quote that came out of the Christian Science Monitor recently in an article about the recently approved Homeland Security Act in the United States. And it begins, quote, "When you board a plane in the next year, your pilot may be armed. Make a call from a payphone in the ballpark and it may be taped. Pay for a sandwich with a credit card and the transaction may wind up in an electronic file with your tax returns, travel history, and speeding tickets. These are some of the ways that the biggest reorganization of the federal government in half a century could trickle down into the minutiae of everyday life in America. The Homeland Security Act that President Bush is poised to sign is sweeping in scope and will have big consequences intended and unintended on everything from civil liberties of Americans to the process for immigrants." This comes from the Christian Science Monitor, and joining us on the line is Rocco Galati, who's a constitutional lawyer who has worked for the Crown and is now specializing in defending those accused by reason of the new anti-terrorism laws here in Canada and in various suits against the government. He'll be speaking in Montreal this evening, Monday evening, and we'll have more information on that. But first of all, Rocco, could you give us your comments on this this Homeland Security Act that just passed last week in the United States?
Well, you know, for those of us who've been listening prior to 9/11, this is old news. I'm on record in May 16th of 2001, where I was making submissions for the Canadian Islamic Congress against C-16, which was a charities bill that they wanted to do secret trials to defund charities that were allegedly funding terrorist organizations. And I told the House of Commons committee then, this is the slippery slope to the Orwellian dictatorship that's coming down the path. And this all came on the heels of Seattle and Quebec City. And those of us who were involved in challenging the trade deals, both under the MAI, and I litigated that to the Supreme Court, as well as the Quebec City perimeter fence case that I was up in Quebec City for, knew that this was coming. We warned parliamentarians, both on C-16 and C-36, that this was coming. A year ago, public officials, ministers of the Crown, publicly called me irresponsible and a fearmonger for suggesting that we're going to have all-sweeping, controlling legislation akin to a dictatorship. Well, here it is. Let's face it. They are looking for 20, 40 alleged terrorists in the United States of America, and they are going to be up the yin-yang of 300 million citizens. Every time you go for dinner and you put it on a credit card, every time you gas up and you put it on a credit card, every time you financially transact, they're going to have all this information. Why do they need this information? Because when you open your mouth in opposition to the government, like those futuristic movies we saw 10 or 15 years ago, they will literally electronically shut you down. They know where you bank. They know where you shop. They know everything about you. And they can shut you down in a second, paint you as a loony, change your records, and you know what? Nobody will care or believe you because you're one of those terrorists.
Well,
are people blind and stupid? What is this all about? Why do they need to collect every single financial transaction of every single citizen?
Well, let's put the Homeland Security Act aside and just look inwards at the legislation that's passed in Canada. Under this legislation, Rocco Galati, are you a terrorist?
Yes, so are you by doing this interview. Listen, you're a terrorist if you protest and advocate boycotts of multinational corporations. You're a terrorist if you disagree. You're a terrorist if you believe in peace in Iraq. You're a terrorist if you oppose war in Afghanistan. You're a terrorist to the government if you oppose their political and, more importantly, their economic agenda.
People
under Canadian law, make no mistake about it, it is an act of terrorism to advocate boycotts. Did you know that?
People listening might be quite surprised and wonder how this came about in Canada. Where was the debate? Where was the opposition to this actually coming into law?
There was no debate. It was a democracy. In 1997, I gave a talk at the Save Canada conference in Ottawa. We have long lost the pretense of a democracy. We have a one-man show in this country, okay? People confuse peace and quiet with democracy and violence with dictatorship. Just because a country is peaceful and there is relatively no violence does not mean it's a democratic state. We have a dictatorship in Canada. I'm not the first to say it, and I won't be the last. You know, think about it. People accept free and non-free votes in the House of Commons. Just stop and pause. It is a criminal offense under the criminal code to actually try to influence the way an MP will vote. Did you know that? You cannot threaten or cajole an MP into voting. It's a criminal code offense. Yet the Prime Minister tells his MPs how to vote every day. We accept that the Prime Minister can tell elected MPs when they're free to vote. I mean, think about that, and we accept that. That's what the Russians used to do in the Politburo. That's what the Chinese did under their communist regime. That's what they do in any dictatorship. El Jefe tells you how to vote.
Well, give us the timeline for these terrorist laws. You said there was no debate, no discussion.
Well, they're already in. They've been laws since January of this year. We're living under them already. Search warrants have already been executed under them. Oh, and by the way, the country is also asleep while C-18 currently goes through the House of Commons. That's the new citizenship bill. It's going to invoke the same secret trial mechanisms for stripping people of citizenships for alleged misrepresentations when they came through the country way back when, 30, 40 years. So they're going to, the Minister of Immigration and Citizenship is going to sign a determination that you misrepresented. You don't get to see the evidence. There's a security intelligence report that goes to a federal court judge. You don't get to see what the basis of the allegations are. And then if he agrees that the certificate is reasonable, you're thereafter deported. That's coming in, at a federal court near you in about 2 weeks when it passes final reading. Where's the country? So you've been here 40 years, you have children, you have grandchildren. They allege you misrepresented when you came through the border in 1962, but they won't tell you how, when, and why. And you're going to be deported as a citizen after 40 years in this country without knowing why. You know? And we have a saying with my people, I'm Calabrian, I'm a Southern Italian, and we have a saying that just because you bury your head in the sand doesn't mean the headache goes away. And that's what Canadians and North Americans are doing. And quite frankly, it's a tribal reaction because they think this only applies to brown-skinned Muslims and Arabs. So why should we care?
Well, let's break down these laws. You had described that the attack that they can put on dissent. Maybe you can be more specific as to the specific ways that the laws that are currently in effect that have come about since September the 11th directly target freedoms like the freedom of dissent.
Well, you live in Montreal. Have you ever seen a fascist dictatorial move like Concordia University pulled? Oh, here in Toronto, we're taking smelling sauce to say what they banned two elected members of parliament from university premises to speak. What planet are you people on? You need examples? You need examples of people who've been charged in Montreal for trying to protest in public? You need examples after Quebec City, gas canisters being projected into 62-year-old ex-senators and retired professors? You know, what is this rhetoric that goes on? Give examples. We've lived through it for now for 2 years. And, by the way, it's against the law to protest with the mask on in North America, both in the States and in Canada. But the New York Supreme Court 2 days ago ruled that the Ku Klux Klan has a constitutional right to parade in public with their hoods on. You know, how many examples do you need? Under American law, if you're an American white terrorist, you're not a terrorist. So Timothy McVeigh, the militia, the Ku Klux Klan is not on the list of terrorist groups. Anybody who talks against these things is met with a ratio of 3 police to 1 protester on the streets in Montreal and Toronto. You can't go to a protest anymore without seeing the cavalry, no matter how small. Being a protester or activist is now a dirty word. It's no longer a constitutional right to freely assemble, to freely express yourself. It's been a constitutional right since 1215, since the Magna Carta, to do that. But all of a sudden, if you do that, you're a terrorist.
Can you describe the kind of work that you've been doing defending those who have been accused by these laws?
Well, I represent Mr. Jabala, Mr. Majub, Mr. Shihab, the photocopy shop owner in Toronto whose life was ruined because his nephew was innocent. I represent the family of Mr. Jabara, who was kidnapped by CSIS into the United States. I represent the grandparents of the boy Kader, who's in Guantanamo Bay. That's the kind of cases I do. And in all these cases, they make allegations. But you know what? There's one little detail that's missing as a lawyer that I find a bit disturbing. The proof. Where's the evidence? There's no evidence. There's just allegations. And we live in a nightmare of secret trials, which are inquisitorial. The procedure that's invoked, and I'll be speaking about this, and I'll be quoting from some judges who describe the Catholic Inquisition of the Middle Ages. It's haunting. That's exactly the procedure in our new laws for dealing with these issues, is how the Roman Catholic inquisitors dealt with alleged infidels. The procedure is to the T, the same.
All of the things that you mentioned in terms of the examples, the cases that you're dealing with, it's obvious that these laws have a great impact on Canadian society and Canadian abilities to participate in this society and be critical in what have been called difficult times since September the 11th. What are your thoughts on why this is not an open debate or discussion in our mainstream media? We have Canadian Broadcast Corporation, something that can link up to every community here in Canada, but you just don't hear about these issues.
Well, it's a very complex issue, but I can sum it up in a nutshell. What free press do you have in Canada? You have the CBC that's beholden to the government of Canada to the tune of over $1 billion a year, okay? Let's be frank. They control the purse strings, okay? If you're naive enough to think that they can do any story about anything to whatever nerve center of government, you're dreaming. I've experienced that. Second of all, you have a private media that's in the hands of two or three people who agree with this corporate agenda. And so, what are you talking about? What media? There's no media here. There is a tool of propaganda for the agenda that's being set, for the globalization and militarization agenda that's being set. The world is in crisis. People don't realize that. The West, to maintain its standard of living and its lifestyle, has to rape the energy supplies of the rest of the world. And this is the pretext under which we're doing it. 20% of the world here consumes 82% of the entire energy and resources of the world. We are all complicit in this. And this is why nobody wants to deal with it. Because to deal with it is like, it's like, you know, an allegation of incest at the family table. You think a lot of the family members really want to deal with it the first time it comes up? People find it more comforting to say the government's taking care of it. I'm not complicit in anything. You know, look at Europe. You know, you get protests in Florence of 500,000 people. There aren't 500,000 people in the city of Florence. Did you know that? There are 400,000 people marching in the streets of London. Greece had a two-day national strike to protest the war in Afghanistan. They're not asleep in Europe. Do you hear about it here? Not really. You get a brief mention of it. Even in England, only 27% of the public supports the campaign in Afghanistan and Iraq. You have to distinguish between the support of the people and the governments of the day who are in the pockets now of corporations who are really puppet governments in this turn to globalization.
Well, for those who are looking for an opportunity to engage on these issues, it's obviously not happening within our medias, but it is happening here in Montreal this evening at 7 p.m. at the University of Montreal at Pavillon Jean-Briand, and it's in room B0245, and Rocco Galata is actually going to be there presenting anti-terrorist laws, protection or repression. It's a conference mainly in English and questions to be answered in French. Rocco Galata is going to be coming from, is it Toronto?
Toronto, yes.
From Toronto, where he works has worked as a constitutional lawyer for the Crown, but now he's specializing in defending those accused under these laws and various other suits against the government. And he'll be introduced by Michael Chosedeschi, who's also from the Montreal area. Again, that's happening this evening at 7 p.m. in room B0245 at Pavillon Jean-Briand at the Université de Montréal. Rocco, you've been talking about this in the North American context, but you've also mentioned the demonstrations in Europe, the participation on the issues of our times that European citizens are engaging in, but the kind of crackdown that we've seen in terms of various pieces of legislation that have passed isn't just isolated here in North America, where we have the various anti-terrorist legislations that have passed here in Canada, also the Homeland Security Act in the United States. There's also things going on in Europe. I wonder if you can maybe comment on the global situation for communities that are being targeted by this legislation, whether it's immigrant communities or communities of various struggles.
Well, this is in the broadest possible brushstroke, this entire campaign against terrorism is just a sideshow to distract us from the real agenda, which is globalization and militarization of the world, literally. And if anybody, I challenge anybody who goffs at that to publicly debate me on it, because what's happening is that we, as conscientious citizens, have not caught up with the times. Although protest is important, although making your MPs aware of your views is important, although all these things have been traditionally important in the democratic process, with the advent of globalization, local governments have become relatively irrelevant, and sovereignty has had to take a back step to these world-binding international treaties, to the point that even our Supreme Court has cowardly retracted from enforcing domestic constitutional law in the face of these treaties. They won't even hear the cases. So what's happening is, while we're still on the old train tracks, right, these governments and corporations are on fast-speed magnetic tracks of globalizing and militarizing. The only language they understand is the language that they are propagating. They are there to monopolize, control the extraction of resources, the manufacturing of goods and services, and the distribution of the same. So the only time they perk up is when you say, you know, I'm not going to buy your product, or I'm going to withdraw my consent to be taxed in this dictatorship. Then they perk up. That's why boycotts are an act of treason under the new Homeland Security Act. You have to understand that. It is an act of treason punishable by 40 years to advocate a boycott in America now. Now, the sooner people come to realize what's happening, the quicker, the more effective our dissenting voices will be. Okay? It's too easy to send three police officers for every screaming protester to beat you over the head, because they don't care what you're saying. It does not affect them anymore, because that dissent no longer translates into any meaningful democratic process. So scream all you want. They'll just hit you over the head for fun time. But if you say to them, you know what, I'm not going to buy your cars anymore, I'm not going to gas up anymore, they'll freak. They'll charge you. And then they really get concerned. Why? Because that's their agenda. That's what they really are concerned about. They're not concerned about the fantasy of democracy in North America anymore. You can say what you want. They'll just spin it in the media. But the moment you start an economic analysis, the moment you start saying, well, maybe we shouldn't buy these goods, and you see what kind of reaction you get. And I think we have to catch up as dissenting voices and be more intelligent about this and focus the debate on their terms, because they're the masters, okay? If you're complaining to them about something irrelevant, they'll just shoo you off. I don't know if I answered your question or not, but we have to understand that as dissenting voices.
Rocco Galata, thank you very much for taking this time to speak with us. Again, if you'd like to engage on these issues with Rocco, he will be in town this evening at 7 p.m. at the University of Montreal. For more information on that event, you can call 278-2748. Again, that's 278-2748. Or check out the website rpdp.org. Thanks again, Rocco.
Thank you.